Welcome to episode 69 of the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Beth Below. My guest today shares this piece of wisdom from his most recent book. In addition to passion, you must develop a skill that provides a solution to a problem. We heard Pamela Slim in episode 68 tell us that hating your job is not a business plan, feeling a passion is not a business plan either. My conversation with introvert entrepreneur Chris Guillebeau, author of The $100 Startup and founder of the World Domination Summit, builds on Pam's idea. It's one of the biggest ways that people romanticize entrepreneurship. They believe that identifying and following a passion is the way to happiness and riches. There's truth in the idea that passion is a key ingredient in any entrepreneurial pursuit. But that's only part of the story. In order to build a business, there has to be an intersection of your passion and skills with what the market needs. You're about to hear Chris's perspective on what it takes to find that magical balance, along with some insights as to how he takes care of his introvert energy while facilitating and leading one of the year's largest events for people who want to change the world. Chris Guillebeau is a New York Times bestselling author and modern-day explorer. During a lifetime of self-employment that included a 4-year commitment as a volunteer executive in West Africa, he visited every country in the world, that would be 193 countries total, before his 35th birthday. Since then, he has modeled the proven definition of an entrepreneur, someone who will work 24 hours a day for themselves to avoid working 1 hour a day for someone else. Chris's first book, The Art of Nonconformity, was translated into more than 20 languages. His second book, The $100 Startup, was a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller, selling more than 300,000 copies worldwide. His latest book, The Happiness of Pursuit, will be published by Crown Random House in September 2014. Every summer in Portland, Oregon, Chris hosts the World Domination Summit, a gathering of creative, remarkable people with thousands in attendance. Chris is also the founder of Pioneer Nation, Unconventional Guides, the Travel Hacking Cartel, and numerous other projects. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm thrilled to be talking with you today.
Thank you. I'm thrilled too, Beth.
Well, what's making you smile today?
What is making me smile? I'm excited to talk about introverts entrepreneurship. I think that's great. I'm also working on redesigning my whole blog, which is greatly overdue. And the reason I'm excited about it is not just a new design, but I'll be featuring the stories of my readers a lot more. It's something I've wanted to do for a long time, so I'm glad that it's actually happening.
Cool. Is that related to a tweet that I saw recently about getting stories from travelers?
Yes, it is. It is, actually. Like, I have this wonderful community. Like, as you know, I have these amazing people doing all this crazy stuff all over the world. And for some reason, like, we've connected in this online and offline environment. But I feel like I don't do a really good job of actually, like, focusing on them and sharing their lessons and experiences. And so the new blog will hopefully do that.
Awesome. Look forward to that. I want to start out by asking a couple questions. Like you said, we want to touch on introvert entrepreneurship as a thread through this. And perhaps first, you know, I remember when I attended WDS, one of the first things you did when you got up on stage on welcoming night was profess your introversion. How did you come to know that you were an introvert?
Oh, how did I come to know? That's a good question. Because I don't know that I always like thought about terminology per se. I always knew that I liked to be by myself, and I kind of thrived on just alone time. And I could navigate social situations, and I was comfortable with that. But when I thought about situations that gave me anxiety, it would always be related to like something social, and in situations that kind of built my anxiety, like that came from being on my own. So I guess gradually over time, I realized that there are different personality types, and some of that is innate, and we just have to learn to adapt that for our own life.
Yeah. Well, I will be circling back to that particular theme in a few minutes, but I want to start out by talking about an idea that you bring up in $100 Startup, which is a book that I highly recommend to everyone listening, especially if you're thinking about entrepreneurship and you're wondering, where do I begin? And you give us a very doable approach, I guess. And One of the things that I hear a lot from clients is about bringing together what they're passionate about and how they make their living. And you write, I can be very passionate about eating pizza, but no one's going to pay me to do it. Right. And of course, you know, the eating pizza is a kind of a simple and obvious thing that we can be passionate about. But sometimes there are more profound things, I suppose, that we can be passionate about. But there's a possibility no one's going to pay for us to do it.
Right.
Like my husband loves to sail. So what can he do? And we're often told, do what you love and the money will follow. But what happens when that passion is not so easily monetized?
Yeah, great question, great topic, and thank you for saying kind things about the book. I appreciate that. The pizza example, yeah, as you said, it's kind of simple. Like, no one expects you to be able to like eat pizza and get paid for it. But I do think that sometimes we do apply that mindset, and we're like, oh, sure, I can just do what I love, and the money will follow, but not necessarily. Mm-hmm. So I think the answer is that some kinds of passion can be monetized, and some can't. And most of us are passionate about more than one thing. Like, as excited as I can be about eating pizza, that's not like the focus of my life. So most of us have all kinds of things, you know, probably like I would say like 4 to 6 things that we really love to do. And somewhere there's some overlap, somewhere there's an intersection between things that we love to do, the things that we are naturally gifted at, as well as the things that we've kind of developed our giftings or our skills in, and what other people are interested in and what other people will pay to learn about or will pay to experience. And so a lot of what that whole $100 setup model is about finding convergence between these two things and finding, okay, like, here's the thing that I love, that I have this skill in or this knowledge, and here's what other people are also interested in. That's the answer to doing what you love and the money will follow. So mm-hmm. The sailing example is great because I don't really sail that much, but I do travel a lot. You know, for the past 10 years, I was going all over the world on this quest to visit every country. And when I first started writing my blog, I was writing some kind of basic trip reports, narratives about what it was like to go to such and such a country. It was pretty basic. Like, that's a good word, because some people would read and think it was interesting, but a lot of other people are kind of like, well, this is great for you, but how does this help me? You know, it doesn't really help me to know that someone else is able to travel in this way. So I found more success, at least in terms of monetizing and creating a business, you know, when I started focusing on the needs of other people. And realizing, okay, I do have a certain skill in being able to travel in this way, and I have learned to travel frequently, and I've been able to earn a lot of frequent flyer miles, and I've gained a lot of knowledge about international travel and how the world works. So if I can find a way to transfer that knowledge to teach other people, to help them have the same experiences, like, once I started doing that, that's when I found, you know, a lot more business success. So it was in following my passion, but it was also in redirecting that to be a little bit less focused on me and a little bit more focused on how other people could benefit as well.
And what I hear is that you listened when other people said, oh, wow, you're doing that. I don't know how to do that. And like you said, you provided them with some information and put the focus on them. And I think it's so important to listen to people when they give us that feedback, because sometimes we don't know what we know. So we don't even know that we have a marketable knowledge or skill until we start putting it out there and talking about it.
Yeah, so you should pay attention, you know, to these questions you get, especially if you are beginning a blog or if you're using social media more actively, if you are engaging in online conversations, like, or even if you're not even doing that, even just among your friends or your family, like, you should pay attention to the questions that you get, because if you find, like, a recurring theme, that may be a good clue. In my case, the recurring theme was, you know, 5 years ago, everyone was like, oh, like, how do you do this? You book these round-the-world plane tickets, and they don't cost very much. You're able to get this good value. Like, show me how to do it. And so I started writing some blog posts about it, but then I realized, like, the answers are even more in-depth. And, you know, there's probably, like, multiple ways that I could respond to that need. So I do believe, like, everyone's an expert in something. Mm-hmm. I do believe, like, everyone has some kind of knowledge or skill that is interesting and potentially valuable to others.
Yeah. Well, you're reminding me of a couple that I know in Michigan that I'm friends with, and they have a skill of sales. And then they have a passion for sailing. And so what they did was they said, well, we want to own a 45-foot sailboat, for instance. I can't remember how long the sailboat is, but they said, we want to own that. How can we afford to do that? Well, we can get it and we can charter it. And because we are good at that business development and sales piece, then that's how we can basically pay for our dream. And they did the same thing. They built a bed and breakfast that was like a French chateau. They wanted to have this particular kind of dwelling. And so they've found a way to combine an ambition or an aspiration with their business. And it works for them.
That's great. So actually, they combined it with a skill in many ways.
Exactly.
Like, the skill is sales, which essentially is relationship building, relationship maintenance, you know, it's a skill for being able to navigate that and make people feel comfortable and make them feel like they have a trusted environment to operate from. And then they applied that to the thing that they were super excited about, which was sailing. So that's a wonderful example. So maybe not everyone wants to own a sailboat and charter it, just like not everyone wants to travel to every country in the world. Mm-hmm. But again, like, I really do think everyone has some specific knowledge or some interest in topic. You know, even if it's something that seems kind of like far out, it's like, there are probably other people who have the same interest or desire to learn about it, especially like in this globally connected world. So, you know, if you're trying to figure out what that is, I think it's helpful to just make lists and mm-hmm. just outline and think like, what are all these things I'm interested in? What do people ask about? What skills do I have? It's not just the diploma that I receive or the degree mm-hmm. that I receive, but, you know, what are the related tangential skills, perhaps?
Yeah, I'd be fascinated to know how many people are actually working in the field for which they went to school.
Probably almost an anomaly if you are, you know?
Exactly. Well, you know, along the lines of following your passion, the other thing that I've seen, especially among people who have a monetizable passion, my obvious example is coaches. You know, people mm-hmm. who love to coach, love to help other people, but they hit a wall because as soon mm-hmm. as you start to monetize it and put a business structure around it, it becomes work. A whole new layer of things comes on to it. What would you say to someone who has that concern about their passion not being fun anymore once they do monetize it?
Yeah, that's also a great question. I think it's a little bit tricky. I don't want to just say like everything will be okay, because I do think there's some people who just want to do the thing that they love to do and they don't actually enjoy the aspects related to it. And so there's some people who, to use the sailing, you know, analogy still, like some people may just want to sail. And they wouldn't want to teach someone else how to do it. They wouldn't want to own a business like doing the charter kind of stuff. So I think it's important to think about, like, when you're going into it, like, what does this look like? You know, do I enjoy thinking about this? Do I enjoy planning for this? Do I enjoy helping other people with it? Do I like explaining the different steps? And for me, like, for travel, I did enjoy that. So it's fine, and it doesn't feel like work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess maybe the other answer is, like, you find a way to really focus on that, and you get some help, you know, with the aspects that you don't enjoy or something. But I do think it's something you should think about. You know, if there's something that you really love that's kind of personal, maybe you should reserve that for your personal inner life. But for the business thing, hopefully you like some of the other aspects of it as well.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I want to shift gears and talk a little bit about World Domination Summit. For those who aren't familiar with it, how would you describe it?
Oh, I try not to describe WDS too much because everybody has their own definition, and that's great. Yeah. That's fine. I guess if I had to say something, I would say it's this, you know, international gathering of creative, remarkable people coming together to focus on life, work, and travel in different ways.
Yeah. And I can say from my first experience, I went in 2013, and there were some close to 3,000 people, if I'm remembering right.
Yep.
And I remember having some anxiety and fear before the event, thinking, is this going to be overwhelming?
Yeah.
Is it just going to be too much? And yeah. I was actually rather shocked that the pace of it, the feeling of all of it was so, it felt comfortable. It was very stimulating, but at the same time, it wasn't overwhelming. And I even found myself willing, get this, when I walk into the venue, you know, you would have your volunteers there. And they want to, like, give you a high five and stuff.
Right.
I actually, like, let myself get into the spirit of that. And, you know, that says something, because usually I'd be like, okay, I'm just going to kind of avoid the line and find the other door, you know. So I want to acknowledge what a great atmosphere you set up. And what key choices have you made that have contributed to the success of WDS and to creating that kind of atmosphere?
Well, once again, thank you for saying that. That doesn't mean a lot. You know, we try to be sensitive. I guess maybe that's the first thing, is just being aware that there are a lot of different people from different backgrounds coming, and we want to be cognizant of that fact. And we want to deliberately encourage people who are introverts or highly sensitive, or, you know, even if they use a different term, or even if they don't have a term, but they just wouldn't normally come to an event. You know, we try to, as much as possible, you know, even market to them and just let them know that they will feel welcome. And some of this, just the spirit of welcomeness that you talked about, like, you know, the ambassadors, the volunteers that are in the lobby doing the high five, like, I didn't tell them to do that. Like, part of the script, like, hey, stand in the lobby, like, they are supposed to be in the lobby, but the whole, like, high five line that came to be, that was just, you know, their own initiative. So I think a lot of it is just finding the right people in terms of the event staff, the volunteers, and then, of course, the attendees themselves. A lot of the magic of something like that is really making sure that the right people are there. And then I guess the second thing is, even though, like, having the right people there is first and foremost, I do believe in kind of curating and programming an overall experience, and I really do want to actually kind of take responsibility for a lot of different details and not just kind of leave it all open, you know? And I guess the reason I do that is I really want to respect people's time and investment and, like, their choice to come to this. They could have done something else. Some of them had to arrange childcare, or they had to, like, save up, or they made a deliberate choice to come when they could have, you know, stayed home. So I guess I want to just think about, you know, all the different elements of the experience, and we're not going to get everything right, but how can I get as much of it right as possible, and whatever we don't get right, we're going to try to learn from year to year. It's probably the only thing I can think of in terms of why it's successful. We try to honor the people who are a part of it, and we try to recognize them as much as possible.
Yeah, well, that was felt by, speaking for myself, but I'm sure other people, that was felt by us. And what I can appreciate is that you don't have to be throwing an event for 3,000 people to practice what you just shared.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. I mean, that's the thing, for anybody listening, like, maybe that sounds overwhelming, but, like, that's not how I began, you know? I began, like, doing meetups with, like, 5 people. You know, I went on this book tour years ago, and I went to all 50 states, and some of those stops, like, in really small areas, they had, like, 5 or 10 people. And at the time, that was really big for me, too. Like, you know, it was a big thing for me. So I do believe that the skills and the experience that you gain, they do translate, you know, to bigger things later. But also, you know, big is always relative.
Exactly. How do you honor your introvert energy during such a big event, or really during any event? You know, how do you take care of yourself in the midst of not just a lot of people, but probably a lot of people wanting a piece of you?
Sure, sure. I think I take care of myself mostly afterwards. I think that's probably the best and most honest answer, is that it is a very immersive kind of experience, and there is really nothing I can do but, like, be present and be focused during that time. And when I say that time, it's not just those 3 days, and there's, like, so much, you know, in the lead up and in the takedown. But then I guess I try to go away afterwards. And even if it's the smallest thing, like if I'm just doing, like, an event somewhere else or something, or if I'm just, like, a part of someone else's thing, then it does take a lot out of me. But I just kind of plan for later to kind of be on my own. And, you know, I was at a thing in Denver last week, and I did my little part of the stage presentation. And then afterwards, there was a party, and I went to the party, and I said hi to some people. But then I kind of went back to my room. Yeah. Just kind of chilled. And that's what I do.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, you plan for that, and it's okay. I don't hear any, you know, well, I should have stayed, but I didn't, you know.
No, not at all. No fear of missing out, because...
Exactly.
It's going to be another one. It's going to be something else, you know, and I know I have to... I'm focused on what I'm trying to do. I know if I, like, wear myself out too much, then I'm not going to be able to keep commitments, essentially, that I've made to other people or to myself.
Well, I'm so glad you reminded me of that fear of missing out, because I remember it was you or someone else that shared that from the stage and said, kind of, get over it, because there's so much going on.
Right. Yeah, I think we said that about certain, like, workshops or things. Things get full, and you're always trying to manage expectations, but yes.
Yeah. Oh, and that's another great point, is about managing expectations. And I think that contributes to the success of WDS, as well as probably your own personal success of how you're showing up at the event and allowing things to unfold as they are, and to know that something's not going to go right. But, you know, most things will go right, and that's what you celebrate.
Yeah, try to focus on the bigger picture.
Exactly. So speaking of that bigger picture, you know, thinking of the introvert entrepreneurs who might be listening to this, or introverts in traditional professional situations that really have a big dream, but they do have a concern about it being all-consuming and sucking the life right out of them. What advice would you have for them about staying balanced?
I think if you have a big dream, you know, you essentially have this calling in your life. You have this thing I really want to do, and it's like the kernel of inspiration or something. Like, I tend to think, how could that possibly suck the life out of you? Mm-hmm. Like, that's something that's going to bring you life. It's going to bring you joy. Mm-hmm. You know, it might, you know, intimidate you a little bit. You might be a little bit afraid or anxious about it, but that doesn't mean it's going to suck the life out of you. In fact, it's probably the opposite. It probably is something that you should do. Mm-hmm. And that's how I felt when I was starting all these different projects. Like I mentioned, that 50-state book tour. Like, that came about by just me thinking, like, I want to meet my readers. Well, where are my readers? Well, they're all over the place. Like, I have this new book coming out, and wouldn't it be crazy to go to, like, all 50 states? And as soon as I thought of it, I was like, that is, I have to do that. I have to do that. And it did seem like a big, like, an intimidating thing. I was like, how am I going to do it? How am I going to pay for it? How am I going to figure out? And I do get anxious, and, you know, so I just knew I had to do it. So I don't know. I guess, like, you should chase those dreams. You shouldn't run away from them or hide from them. So, like, whatever negative experience, you know, you're going to have is going to come from failing to pursue that dream. If you had this dream and you don't do it, like, you're really going to, you know, regret that later.
Exactly. Yeah. Not doing it is what's going to suck the life out of you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. That's really inspiring and reminder to all of us that when we have that big dream, where there's a will, there's a way. And you allow that passion to carry you through that and see it as something, like you said, that brings you joy. Congratulations on all of that. And thank you.
So far, so good. Yeah. You know, just a little interjection. I should also say that not everything works as I hope, you know, and that's okay. Like, I have a lot of improvement to make. And when we started this conversation, I was telling you about my blog. Like, I have been discouraged about my blog for like a year and a half because I feel like it's old and it needs, you know, updating and blah, blah, blah. So I'm finally addressing that now, but for the last year and a half, I've been doing this all this other stuff, which is great, but that's been neglected. So it's always a matter of continuous improvement.
Absolutely. And I'm guessing that while the blog might have been bugging you a little bit during that time, you were also probably sort of mentally working on it and things were taking shape so that now that you've got that window of opportunity, you're ready to jump in and
make those
changes.
Find out.
Yeah,
we'll find out in a few weeks, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I have a final question that I ask all of my guests. And if you were granted a 3-week vacation on Introvert Island, you know, rest up from WDS, I guess,
sure.
And you could only take 3 books with you, what would you take with you and why?
Yeah, that's very fun. Despite being an introvert, I don't think I would ever take a 3-week vacation anywhere because I do love my work. I love doing my stuff. But if I were forced to, I would take Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace because I'm a big fan of him, but I never actually finished that book. It's like 1,000 pages or something. It's like super complicated and every paragraph is brilliant, but it's really hard to get through. So I think I read like the first 100 pages, but if I had 3 weeks, I would take that with me. I would take a long biography of someone. I don't know who it would be, but some historical figure. Also maybe a long book. Probably be a good idea for 3 weeks. Lastly, I would take some kind of non-literary fiction book. I would take like a thriller or a detective story or just something kind of fun, and I would read it very slowly. I would like ration the pages by the number of days, and I would read the 5 pages a day or 10 pages a day or whatever it worked out to be.
Wow. I've never done anything like that, especially if I get something like that that's a page turner.
Well, you'd have 3 weeks. That's the thing. The point
is,
if you read the whole thing in a day, what are you going to do?
Yep.
You know?
Twiddle your thumbs. and then get to Infinite. Is it called Infinite Jazz? Is that the first one?
Infinite Jest, I think.
Jest. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Wanted to make sure we got that right. Terrific. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, your new blog and whatnot. So how can people connect with you and especially get to that new blog and learn more about what you're up to?
Oh, well, everything I do is on chrisgillibeau.com, which no one can spell, but maybe you can link it up or they can type something close to it into Google or they can type the art of nonconformity and that will take them to me.
All right. Any parting words of wisdom for our audience?
I don't know if I have any parting words of wisdom, but it's a big honor to be on your podcast. And if anybody has any questions or wants to share anything else, I'm more than happy to hear from them.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chris. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, an honor on my side as well. And I'm totally looking forward to WDS this year, and I hope that I see some of our podcast listeners there as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Beth.
Thanks, Chris. I had the great pleasure of attending my second World Domination Summit this past July. While there, I witnessed the same energy that I had witnessed when I attended in 2013. Chris led the event with a very light touch, letting his volunteers and speakers do what they do best. It was, in my experience, one of the strongest demonstrations of how introvert entrepreneurs can be powerful leaders and be heard loud and clear without shouting or trying to be something they're not. Be sure to stay tuned for upcoming episodes of The Introvert Entrepreneur when I interview venture capitalist Brad Feld and John E. Doerr, co-author of Insight Selling, Surprising Research on What Sales Winners Do Differently. I'm going to leave you with one final thought from Mary Kay Ash. Aerodynamically, the bumblebee should not be able to fly, but the bumblebee does not know it, so it goes on flying anyway. So in addition to passion, focused, hard work, and skills, you need a certain blissful ignorance about what is and isn't possible. Don't overthink things or research your idea or plan to pieces. Live in curiosity and a willingness not to know. Fly, even if you don't think that you have wings. Thanks for listening today. If you want to learn more about me and The Introvert Entrepreneur, visit my website at www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. The site includes links to my blog, social media communities, book, and coaching services. I would love to hear from you. So until we meet again, remember that success is an inside job.